Blog Talk Radio.
Nobody
gave us a shot. Nobody. But you still got to play the game, Sal. We knew that. We knew that.
And what are you crying for?
And before we walked out of halftime, I just grabbed everybody's hands and we just said, no weapon. As a team formed against us, shall prosper. No weapon. Man can't control what God has already better, but blessed and destined, man. This is awesome, man. I told them that we had been here before. You know, we ran this race before in Pittsburgh, and we watched that. We watched that same drive. And for us to go down there and do it, we said that when we came out here, we was going to claim victory. We claimed victory. Victory is ours. It's ours, man.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Greetings, War Roomians. Welcome back for another edition of your favorite show. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm here at the round table with my partner in crime, Jimmy Williams. And the third member of our crew, Paul Johnson, will join us in a few. We've got a great show for you today. We'll be talking NFL playoffs, Lance Armstrong, Manti Te'o, and a lot more. But midway through this hour, we'll be talking foot and ankle injuries with podiatrist Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. Join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join in the conversation. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we get to the rundown, you know we got some shout-outs. The future of sports talk radio has arrived, so be sure to listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also, catch Mojo and the crew of the Season Ticket on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio as well. Finally, check out Brandon and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at ueradiolive.com. Don't worry if you can't catch them live. You can hear and watch all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. But right now, Jimmy, let us know, you know, who's having a birthday today.
It's my birthday. Yay!
What's up, good brother?
What's going on, bro-ham?
Ain't nothing, man. Just sitting here talking to Manti's woman. Anyway, the birthdays are brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, visit our website. That's warroomsports.com and look for the DirecTV logo. You can click on the DirecTV logo because we can get you the hookup. I mean, you know, when football season comes up next year, you're going to want the Sunday Ticket, not that BS Red Zone channel. that's for women. So, you know, man up and get DirecTV. Warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo. You know, get your special sign-up rate. Let's jump right into these sports birthdays this week, good brother. And the first one I want to talk about is one Dwayne Tyrone Wade Jr.
It's my birthday! Yay!
What you got on Dwayne Wade, Al?
D-Wade turned 31 today. Dwayne Wade, man, there was a point where Dwayne Wade was one of my favorite players in the NBA, man. But every time I see a photo of Dwayne Wade off the basketball court wearing Gabrielle Union's attire, like, I lose an ounce of respect for him every time I see him off the court. Of course, he's a baller on the court. Seems like he may be slowing down a little bit, probably because of injuries. But that's all that kind of takes over my thought process when I hear his name, because I'm tired of seeing him wearing, like, denim leotards and stuff like that. Come on, D-Wade.
Yeah, you got a point there. I mean, D-Wade used to be a fan favorite. Probably, I mean, he still is a fan favorite, but when it comes to the war room, you know, we all think that his sartorial game is, you know, taken away from his basketball game, so to speak. I think about also that series in the finals when Shaq was on the team and they won the championship against the Mavericks, and he just went like banana eight nonsense on everything. He was going to the well with reckless abandon and just like dominating the series. It was one of the most dominant performances I've seen in terms of an athlete in a series was that D. Wade series. So I'm going to always remember that. Now, of course,
Wade County
championship, but it wasn't like that one. And that one, he went crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you gotta always, you know, think about that, even though, you know, like you said, we take away from him now because he walks around with spandex on and young money clothes, but, you know, he put his work in, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely did.
Anyway, let's move on to the next birthday, and that birthday is one Jeremy Schaefer Roenick, a.k.a. J.R., turns 43.
It's my birthday, yay!
Jeremy Roenick, Dev, what you got on that?
JR, of course, you know, being from Philadelphia and being a Flyers fan, I have fond memories of the time that JR was in Philly. You know, he's a 9-time All-Star, MVP winner, Hall of Famer. I think around that time when he did come to Philly, you know, it was kind of exciting because it was a time where you can arguably say that the best player in hockey at this particular moment plays for our team. So, you know, JR, he was the man. Now he's a commentator, analyst, and he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, he plays that Canadian sport that I really talk about. But I do remember him being one of the best players. And, you know, also, of course, he played for the Flyers, and we root for the Flyers just by proxy. So, you know, shout out to him on his birthday. I'm not going to sit here in front like I have a lot to say about him because I don't know, it's 40 time. I like sports when, you know, never mind. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not trying to get into that because, you know, we got a lot of Canadian followers and we love Canada, you know what I mean? Shout out to the great poutine over there in Canada.
Shout out, A.
It's a big birthday for us. Let's talk about one Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr., a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, who turned 71 years of age.
My birthday, yay!
Mama, name him Clay. I'ma call him Clay. Dad, what do you have on, you know, the greatest of all time?
Man, the greatest. I'm pretty. I don't know what's there left to say about Muhammad Ali, man. He's been in the spotlight for so long. Like I said, I hate when they kind of wheel him out there now to make appearances, and you know, it doesn't really seem like, you know, he's functioning well enough to be there, but. Everybody wants to capitalize off the greatest. But, man, you know, just watching that old footage, man, it's fun to just sit down and watch Muhammad Ali fights. It's fun to sit down and watch him talk before his fights. I don't know, man. The greatest.
Yeah. I mean, you know, definitely, and it is bad to see him, like, you know, in his current state. And you wonder if it's all worth it. But I guess when you have a legacy like his, it will be all worth it. Some guys can never – I mean, he's gonna live forever. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Right.
Although now he comes out and it's kind of sad. I mean, he almost burnt down Georgia during the Olympics when they made him carry the torch. But
that torch looked heavy as hell, man.
You know, but it's you know, he's considered the greatest. Do I think he's the greatest? That's up for a whole other show. We can debate that another time. But
oh yeah, definitely. When I say it, I'm just saying it.
Of course.
As a nickname type thing, we definitely can get into
it. It's one of those things, you know, you fully say that, you know, you talk about the history of boxing, and anybody who studies the pugilistic game, you know, other names will come up. But with that being said, you have to give this guy props. Not only for what he did inside the ring, but outside of the ring, and standing up for what he believes in, which some of these cowards refuse to do, you know, guys who have a platform and don't use it, a la Michael Jordan. But that's a whole other, you know, that's a whole other story as well. So, but shout out to the champ on his
birthday. His mama named Clay. I'm going to call her Clay.
You know what I mean? Shout out to the champ on his birthday. Let's jump into one last birthday in his birthday segment, and that's on Constantine D'Amato, a.k.a. Custamato. This is a rest in peace shout out. Custamato passed away in 85. But, you know, he left a legacy as well. So, Dev, when I say Custamato, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And I already know what you're going to say.
I mean, you know, it got to be something about Mike Tyson. I mean, Mike Tyson, when you hear him talk about Custamato, I mean, he paints the picture for you, and you definitely just assume that if it weren't for Custamato, Mike Tyson might be dead or in jail, or we may have never, you know, come to find out who Mike Tyson was, we would have been robbed out of some great boxing memories. You know, he's just when you look at it from that perspective, and as much as we're all the fans in the war room of Mike Tyson, I hold Customato up in great regard because he gave us Mike. So rest in peace to him. He was born in 1908, January 17th, 08, and died, like you said, in November 4th, 85. So, you know, he lived a good life.
Yeah, no doubt. And, of course, we are huge Mike Tyson fans. We're not saying that Mike is the greatest boxer, but Mike has given us more entertainment than almost any other athlete in sports during our lifetime. So, when we think of Customato, it has to jump right to Mike Tyson. When Mike Tyson mm-hmm. talks about this guy as if he's a holy figure, and mm-hmm. I guess to him he was, considering that he took him in and took care of him. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. Now, Customato
like,
has worked with other people, of course.
D'Amato to him.
Pope D'Amato. So, you know, considering our fandom of Mike Tyson, that has to be the first thing that comes to mind. So although it's not Mike Tyson's birthday, it's funny how anytime we talk about anybody involved in boxing in the 80s, or, you know, early 90s, it always jumps to Mike Tyson, and you get to talk about Mike Tyson, although it's not Mike's birthday. That happens with any time we name somebody Sphinx, Evander Holyfield. Anybody talk about boxing in that era, we somehow jump to Mike Tyson. But,
I'm going to actually go back and listen to this podcast and see how many times we actually said Mike Tyson during this segment.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah,
he has nothing to do with this segment.
So rest in peace, Customato, because if not for you, we wouldn't have heard of Mike Tyson. So...
All right.
Those
Mike
are the
Tyson.
Perfect. Yeah. Tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind this week. Mike Tyson sound.
Will do. You know, if Kill was here, he would have played a Mike Tyson sound bite.
Because
Kill loved Mike Tyson sound bites. All right, man. Let me stop talking about Mike Tyson. All right, let me stop. All right, man. Kobe and Vanessa this week, while y'all were on the grind, decided. For good, you know, it's official now that they're calling off the divorce. So, Jimmy, what do you think happened, man? Kobe decided that it was cheaper to keep her, or what?
I think that's part of it, but also, where did she go after, like, you know, honestly, it's like you were married to Kobe Bryant. Now, if you do leave, you're going to have money, so money's not an issue. But when you talk about dating someone, who's she going to date, another athlete? Who's she going to date, like, Ramon Sessions? Like, you know what I mean? Like, only other person you could possibly date at that point would be like LeBron or
yeah,
Durant.
And he about to get married, so.
Yeah, he about to get married, and, you know.
Maybe.
So, it is.
LeBron about to get married. She don't seem like an Oklahoma City type of girl. So,
yeah,
she set the bar.
The bar's already set high. Like, where's she going to go from there?
Tiger single. You know what I mean? Maybe this got
now, Kobe about to lose 150 M's. Kobe, my nigga, I hate it, had to be him. Bitch, you wasn't with me shooting in the gym.
Huh. Bitch, you wasn't with me shooting in the gym.
she took that to heart.
She went in on the board, though. She actually commented on the board and, like, you know.
Crapped on Drake.
Said some foul things about him, yeah. So, you know,
Drake
disrespected him. He did. You know, Drake's fault anyway, but.
Yeah. How you on Kobe Jack that much that you going to diss his wife on your record? Like, come on, guys.
Yeah. Never met that man a day in his life, but it is what it is.
All right, so Rory McIlroy, he signed a lucrative deal with Nike. The official figures, you know, they seem to be getting them confused. I don't know if the official figures have come out, but I heard that it was like a $200 million contract, but then I heard that wasn't true because it was only a five-year deal, and that would be a lot of money to give somebody for 5 years. Either way, he and Tiger Woods are already making Nike commercials together. I don't know if you've seen that new ad. Even though, you know, I was kind of reading some stuff on the making of it, and they actually didn't do the ad together or from the same place, but, you know, they spliced it up to make it look like they were talking to each other. But it's kind of interesting, Jim, because we were just talking about this a few shows ago, and Akil was doubting that any of these guys would make a dent in the advertising world like Tiger. And remember, we brought up Rory and said that, you know, overseas he's kind of like Tiger. But now, you know, Nike's giving him big money, and for now it's like a Rory-Tiger thing. But as he gets better and Tiger gets older – you know, they might be pushing Tiger out and making Rory the number one guy. What do you think about it?
Yeah, this is true. First off, I want to say that ad was dope. Like, you know, sometimes I like when you see a great ad. You know, every ad's not good. So, you know, let's keep it real. But every once in a while you get an ad that's good. That was a pretty dope ad. So
Nike's,
you know,
consistent, though. They, you know, since we were kids, Nike had some creative minds in their advertisements. They got a lot of memorable ones. Speaking of dope, Mon Shumpert's haircut is dope. I'm watching them on the monitor. You got the Big Daddy Kane, or the Christopher Reed, the Kid and Play.
Yeah. Yeah, those things are definitely coming back.
You know what I mean?
But, you know, it is what it is, man. But it's one of those things where, you know, they have to find a plan of what to do after the fact. I mean, The fact of the matter is, Tiger is actually showing his guy some level of respect by doing this at. Tiger, you know, I can't see him. He's never embraced anyone else like this.
Well, Tiger lost a lot of M's, so he probably got to do what Nike says he has to do right now. But and to think about it, that may have been as far as he was gonna go. Tiger might be the reason they didn't do the ad together. Like, man, I ain't doing that. I'll say what you need me to say, but I ain't doing that. But this is just speculation, folks. It's just speculation.
That's what we do.
On what else happened on the grind this week? Let's see. This was the biggest story of the week until, you know, the story that broke yesterday at Notre Dame. Lance Armstrong, he decided, there were rumors about this. We reported it last week that he was going to confess to Oprah. He had the interview. The interview is scheduled to air tonight, or at least the first half of the 2.5-hour interview is scheduled to air tonight on the Oprah Winfrey Network. I got that teed up on the DVR, Jim. I don't even know. I was about to give out the channel on DirecTV, but I didn't prepare for that. But just look for the Oprah Winfrey Network, everybody, at 9 o'clock. I'm pretty sure everybody may be watching the basketball game at that time. But this is a pretty interesting thing because we've talked about Lance Armstrong in the war room for a few years now. And it's always been a sentiment of, okay, it's one of those things where everybody's doing it. You know, we never really believed Lance, but we never really vilified him for it. But when you hear, you know, when he makes his confession finally and you hear about all of the people he supposedly strong-armed, bullied, bankrupted, you know, slandered, overprotecting his own name, like, what do you think about Lance at this point?
You know, I think he's a fraud for a couple reasons. Mm. Not the fact that he cheated, the fact that he didn't take that with him to his grave. You a noodle for that one, buddy.
exactly,
so now you get all the kind of slander that comes your way because you kind of like went. It's just one of them things, if he would have just remained quiet, but he came out and, like, you know, went at people, sort of like Clemens did. But at least Clemens won his trial. But, I mean, you know, like, you bankrupted people, you disrespected people. I want to know how you pass all them damn tests. Like, that's the secret right there. That's what you got to sell, Lance. Like, you put in work. Like, he probably spent so much time, like, ducking the pigs that he probably could have, you know, handled his business without the performing enhancing drug. He spent a lot of energy, like, you know, ducking the fuzz, so to speak. But,
yeah.
You know, he's a fraud. He's a fraud, though. I mean, even if that was true, I would have took that to my grave with me, man.
Yeah, you make a very good point with that, because that's the big question for me right now. Like, what does he know that we don't know? Like, why was it necessary to run to Oprah? And plus, you know, it's not like he confessed to a grand jury. This dude went to Oprah. But why does he feel the need to get on TV? A lot of people are thinking, like, he's that narcissistic. Like, even in defeat, he wants the attention. But I'm thinking that it has to be something else. You know, there is speculation that he wants to be able to get his lifetime ban lifted and compete in 8 years instead of not ever being able to compete again. Jimmy, in 8 years, he's going to be 50 years old. So you're going to be trying to do triathlons when you're 50 years old, thinking that you're going to make enough money from it to sustain your lifestyle? Like, so that doesn't make sense to me. So I still think that there's something
Oprah cut him a nice check or something, man. Oprah cut him a nice check or something, man. So shout out Oprah also, because, like, Oprah found a way to stay relevant, because her network was bombing initially, and then she went and, like, you know, did the Rihanna, the 50 Cent, the Jay-Z interview, now she got Lance. So, yeah, she went back to where she, you know.
Yeah, that's anyway. All she really, like you said, yeah, she tried to do a whole network, and that was, you know, the ratings were terrible. She's like, man, I'm going to take this back to the Oprah Winfrey Show. We're just going to do this prime time with no audience. We just take somebody into a theater one-on-one and do interviews. So
yeah.
I'm kind of curious to see what he's going to say tonight, but I kind of think it's going to be kind of anticlimactic. Because I don't – even she came out, which I don't understand because that's bad marketing, you know, for your own ratings. But she came out and said that she didn't quite get exactly why he was doing this at the time. And, you know, so she's telling us that though he confessed, he didn't say much. That's what I'm taking out of it. And I'm like, how the hell are you marketing your show by telling us beforehand they didn't say much? I mean, there's some other stuff on that we could be watching. So you got to sell
me,
man, Oprah.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, you know, it's crazy, man. And Leroy McConnell is checking in with me on Twitter. Shout out to at KCMax38. He said the person who supplied him the drugs is the person who was doing the testing. That's just speculation right there, so. You know, and that could be the case, you know.
Yeah.
But
like I said, I don't know if anybody here in the war room ever said, oh, I don't believe that Lance Armstrong did it. I mean, we were just at the point that it's cycling and we don't care, but this story has bloomed and blossomed into, like,
yo,
monsters.
But he,
I'm wondering why he didn't take it to his grave, because I know it's not about doing triathlons at 50 years old.
Yeah, he's a plug. But, yo, it's crazy because even with that being said, he still lost because – This was going to be a big story until the next story, like, knocked him off the headlines. And
yes, sir.
You lost anyway.
And so I'm pretty sure if he was trying to grab attention, I'm pretty sure he's salty about the news that came out yesterday. As you all probably have heard, if you follow any type of college football, Notre Dame superstar linebacker Manti Te'o, a big part of the allure for Notre Dame this year that came along with their success was the story of adversity of this guy, Manti Te'o. And there was, back in October, September, October, there was supposed to be a day where his grandmother passed, and 6 hours later, the love of his life, quote unquote, you know, passed from leukemia. We had heard all of these stories about his girlfriend and this and that, and yesterday we find out that this woman, Lene Kiki, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but we found out that this woman never
exists. What's the difference?
We found out that she never exists. Now, Manti is trying to tell us that he was the victim of an evil hoax, you know, where somebody tried to make him think that this woman was in love with him and and she was his girlfriend, and she had leukemia, and then they sprung the news on him that she had died. Jimmy, how does this happen? Like, how do you not know who your girlfriend is?
Well, first
what's
off,
the details
as,
behind
as a,
that?
As a fan of the art of catfishing, and also a fan of the movie and TV show Catfish, this is catfishing like 2.0. This is to the next level, because you actually reeled in someone who is a star athlete. And he's the star of the number one, well, was number one until Alabama, Sandusky him. He's the star of, like, the number one football program in the country. And he had to go online to get some box. Like, he couldn't even, I mean, there's a lot of young ladies on that campus that were, you know, would have provided him, you know. But anyway, the fact of the matter.
Well, hold on, let me, since you mentioned it, for those not in the know, for those trying to follow along, the reason why he claims he didn't know this woman is because their relationship was all online.
he claimed he
talked to her on the phone and on the computer, and it's just weird to me, man. Go
he
ahead,
couldn't
just,
meet a woman in person, so he had to go to the computer to find love, though. Seriously, is that what he had to do?
Come on, man, Ty.
Yeah.
Man, Ty, gotta be yo.
All right.
Yeah, man.
It's
crazy, man.
Here are my thoughts.
But it has to be more to the story, Dev, because my whole thing is, it's a lot of just funny things that go along with this story. I mean, there was some speculation that, you know, maybe he was scared to come out of the closet. There was, you know, now you have people that come out saying, hey, I've met the young lady. Like,
right.
Yo.
Well, there was also speculation that he did it as a publicity stunt because, you know, let's not front. Publicity is a big part of winning the Heisman, and he did come in second in the voting as a linebacker. Other things, I don't know. In my personal opinion, I lean more to the side of publicity stunt, and I think that Manti himself had a lot to do with this. I think it was probably a publicity stunt that, like, snowballed way out of control, and now they're just in damage control mode. Because here's one thing, like, because the story doesn't really add up. Notre Dame, in their press conference, said that they found out about the quote-unquote hoax on December 26th. So Manti Te'o was taking all kinds of questions from reporters just, you know, a week and a half ago at the national championship game, and they were asking him about his girlfriend who died, and he was just answering the questions like there was nothing to it. Now, if they found out on the 26th, then how come they didn't get in front of this thing, not allow him to continue with the hoax on national TV? It's just crazy. And as far as the media goes as well, now, we're not journalists here. We're just analysts, talking heads, talk show hosts. But journalists, you know, there was a time when they did a better job of grabbing all the facts to every story that came out. And then this was not one of those times because, I mean, we do live in that time of immediacy where everybody, the biggest thing is not about getting a story right. It's about getting a story first. So everybody wants to, you know, tweet out the details of something. Nobody went back and actually checked to see if this girl actually existed. Not that we're not supposed to believe a guy when he says his girlfriend died, but if you're writing a piece on this, there's no background that you want to do to get your facts straight before you... Like, I don't get it, man. I don't get it. What's your take? Do you think it was a publicity stunt, or do you think he could be telling the truth with this hoax thing?
No, I mean, if he is, that would make me just question his judgment in general. Like, you know, your chick dies, I mean, you don't even attend the funeral. I mean, like, yo, there's more. There has to be more to the story. Like, so either he's in on it or he's, you know, about as dumb as a bucket of mud. Like,
and Jimmy, speaking of the funeral, the reports that come out about the funeral, and it was in like four different towns in California, one of which didn't even exist. So they made up the chick, they made up the town where her funeral was. Like, this is like really fishy. And like you said, a former fullback from the Arizona Cardinals, who's also Samoan, he came out and says he actually knows the girl and is close with her family. Said he met her on an outreach trip to American Samoa with Troy Polamalu back in 2011. So the plot thickens, man. What's going on here? Seriously.
Yo, and Pete, this. We got a couple of comments. And shout out to LaRoy. LaRoy chimed in on Twitter and on our chat room. At first, he said something's wrong with all that Hawaiian poontang out there. And, you know, I get that. But he also says that explains why he played like crap in the national championship game. Because, you know, he knew it was going to hit the fan. You know what I mean?
He played like crap because Alabama was just better than him.
Better than him, though. So the thing is, though, he was supposed to be a top 10 draft pick. And, you know, it's like, I don't know whether this will affect his draft status.
If they found out he made this up, I think it'll most certainly affect his draft status.
Yeah,
no idea what kind of damage he'll come in and do to your organization because he's crazy.
Yeah. We got a call on the line.
That might actually be our guest, so I'm just going to I can talk a few more minutes about it. You can check and see if that's our guest. And
okay, I'll definitely.
We can get her on right on the other side of the media blast. So, yeah, but this whole Manti Te'o thing is just really confusing. There's a lot of reports coming out where it just doesn't make sense. Like you said, we have somebody out there now who's actually saying that they know the girl, they know the girl's family. So reading that article, I was a little confused as well, because if somebody's going to come out and say that they do indeed know the girl and she does indeed exist, then why didn't they hit him with a further line of questioning, you know, to maybe get some proof on that whole thing. Like, I really don't understand this whole story. But, we do have our guest on the line. So we're going to give you guys, you know, we're going to tell you how to get in touch with us as usual. And then right on the other side of those messages, we're going to bring her on and talk a little bit about some foot and ankle injuries in sports. Of course, everybody, check out our website, warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. It's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about the company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise, and click on the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Sphere and Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android device, and a whole lot more. You can also watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom so you can get into any conversation we're having on the show today. So to get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. We know you have those. And while you're at it, click follow to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and get updates and reminders about the show weekly. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. So to call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. So go ahead and raise your hand, and we might just call on you. But for now, we know that a lot of our listeners, you know, we got the weekend warriors out there who's still trying to live the dream, playing basketball, maybe some flag football. I mean, I know some dudes who really strap on the pads and play some real football. So this is the time you should be tuning in, because this is one of the only times where you might get a little bit of free advice, some free information on some of those injuries you might sustain. Or if you just want to know what's going on with your favorite athlete in football, basketball, whatever sport, you know, this is another good time to go ahead and listen to see what's going on with those guys. We have on the line with us today Dr. Monique Roll from the Alexandria Podiatry Associates, and she's here to talk to us about foot and ankle injuries and, you know, other things going on in your lower extremities. So we'd like to welcome Dr. Roll into the War Room for the very first time. Are you there, Doc?
I'm here.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Good. How are you?
We're good. So glad that you can join us tonight. Right now, you're just on with Devin and Jimmy, the rest of our crew. It's a short night tonight. PJ might be on the line in a few minutes, but we'll be, you know, talking to you a little bit about what you do and, you know, getting some information for the people out there.
What's
so,
up, Doc?
we
sound I'm sorry, like, I had to say that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, we sound like a Bugs Bunny cartoon or something. What's up, Doc? All right, but real quick, we just need to let everybody know that Dr. Roll's segment tonight is brought to you by Fathead, so make sure you get top quality, officially licensed wall graphics of every major sports and entertainment property. It's the ultimate expression of fan pride. Posters, stickers, and decals are no match for the quality Fathead brings to every product. Simply put, they're the real deal. So click on the Fathead logo on our website, warroomsports.com, and find out what it's all about. So we're going to get right into it. And this is, you know, this is basic. We got to know this because, you know, dealing with the feet is a very interesting profession. So we want to know what made you want to become a podiatrist in the first place. Because, you know,
I get asked this question multiple times a day, and I'm happy to answer. since I was probably 8 or 9 years old, I always knew I wanted to be a physician. But I didn't really know exactly what specialty I wanted to go into until after I got into Howard, to college. So basically, I was just exposed to a lot of different health professions, and I liked podiatry because I was able to combine the sports medicine aspect along with surgery, seeing pediatrics, geriatrics. There's just a lot of variety in the area of podiatry medicine and surgery, I should say. I had a mentor who was really great, who is still great, Dr. Kirk Jeter. He's the chief of podiatry at Howard Hospital. And also Dr. Lawrence Harkless, two of my mentors that really helped expose me to the profession. So.
Wow, you are a better person than me because I have sort of a, this might be too much information for my radio listeners, but I have sort of a foot fetish. I'm not Rex Ryan or anything with it, but I don't know. If I was a podiatrist and somebody came into my office with ugly feet, like I probably wouldn't help them. And that's probably what the, you know, the profession is all about. You probably help people with ugly feet, not have ugly feet, but I couldn't do it.
Well, if people didn't have ugly feet, then we would be out of business. So
this is true, man. There's a lot of other specialties that you know, you'd rather not see ugly parts. Anyway, listen. My question is this: in terms of being a podiatrist, what are the most common injuries you see and treat?
Some of the most common injuries, especially during marathon season or obviously ankle sprains, we see a lot of fractures, whether they're toe fractures or metatarsal fractures, heel fractures, ingrown toenails, warts, all types of soft tissue masses, things that people don't know what they are, sweaty feet, hammer toes, onions, you see all, anything dealing with the foot and ankle, you see infections, all types of pain.
Now, with some of that stuff you named, hammer toes, sweaty feet, ingrown toenails, do people come in the office? Like, are a lot of people embarrassed by this, or it's just like, throw it in your face, hey, doc, look at this, help me out?
I think it depends on the patient. Some people are more, unashamed about what's going on with their feet. Other people tend to be a little bit embarrassed. But once they understand that it's a common problem, then that you cannot embarrass. Some people find it a little unusual to go to a foot doctor because a lot of people have never been to a podiatrist, and so they have an issue. So, yeah, it depends on their personality, but most people are not really that ashamed of their feet or while they're there.
That was interesting that you said that, though. Are you supposed to go to a podiatrist unless you have an issue? Like, should I make a yearly appointment to see my podiatrist?
I mean, it definitely, if you are a diabetic or have anyone in your family who has diabetes, that is a mandatory appointment that you should have, whether you have an active issue or not, because especially in the African-American community, Hispanic community, you see so many people with complications from diabetes, and it's really something that there are a lot of preventative things that can be done to prevent, amputations or infections and things like that. So, yes, there's certain populations that need to be there all the time. So.
I definitely just learned something new. But
my feet hurt now.
So in your professional opinion, we're going to take it to sports a little. In your professional opinion, what sports place the most pressure on ligaments, tendons, and the bones of the feet?
I would definitely say football has to be one of the main major sports that cause a lot of injury just because of the force, the aggressiveness of the sport, the impact, the agility or back and forth, quickly changing directions. A lot of times those type of sports are the ones that place the most stress on the foot and ankle. I would say, a close second is basketball, obviously the jumping, running all the time. Any sport that a lot of agility and you're back and forth changing direction quickly, stopping, starting, those are sports I think that are more prone to serious injuries and trauma.
Right. Hey, Jimmy, it's funny that she says that because think about a basketball, like a photo of mm-hmm. people playing basketball in action with somebody maybe cutting or something like that. Now, you see everybody out on the basketball court with some nice, new, fresh sneakers, but then when you see a photo like that when somebody's in action cutting and the way that their shoe is all folded up and their foot is all twisted, like it's just amazing to me that's just everyday movement for an athlete, like. So, yeah, I can see how that could definitely put a lot of strain on your ligaments. But what are the long term effects of strenuous athletics on the feet and ankles?
Yeah, a lot of
could
people end up
if you don't take care of yourself.
Well, I mean, traumatic arthritis, which is usually over time, people have repetitive motion that causes small micro trauma and fractures, which they end up having arthritis due to cartilage erosion to the joint. Some people have chronic sprains where, you know, such good athletes, they're really pressured to get back into sports quickly. So, honestly, a lot of these ankle sprains probably are not really being treated to full, you know, healing. So they're going back on unstable ankles, jumping, running around, and they end up with chronic ankle instability. So that is probably, you know, some of the long-term issues that people are going to have. But you're going to require joint replacement or fusion of some type of joint at some point. So.
I think I'm a victim of that because all my life I've gone back too quickly from ankle injuries that weren't properly healed. I know exactly what you're talking about, Doc.
I actually had Brad sprain one time and played on my sprain and ended up breaking my foot. But that's a whole other story. I don't want to, like, start giving you my personal problems. But,
well, you're going to get that free advice.
I actually have two questions for you, Doc. The first question is this. What are some of the things you recommend to your patients who participate in sports to protect their feet? So if someone, you know, plays basketball on the weekends or, you know, is trying to run a marathon, what kind of things could they do to protect their feet, you know, to take preventative measures so they won't have to, like, you know, have any sort of surgery or come see you, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that one of the major things you see a lot are improper shoe wear. I think, and, you know, I won't name particular brands, but there are certain shoes that are non-supportive.
Hey, we are all for the slander on this show. You can slander any brand you want, as long as they're not a sponsor, and we don't have any shoes.
Well, how about this?
So go ahead and slander away.
How about this? So if you don't want to say anything bad about a brand, give us some good brands or good shoes to wear. Give us the good then. Give us the good. You don't want to give us the bad. Give us the good.
Well, you have ASICs, New Balance. These are, you know, endorsed by the American Podiatric Medical Association. These are very good supportive shoes that provide proper support. I think that's one of the major issues we see is just improper support. So, I mean, we support a lot of the local shoe stores that actually take the time to show the client, the patient, how to pick a good running shoe or whatever to fit the appropriate activity that you're trying to do.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You said New Balance is good?
New Balance, ASICS, Saucony, these are all
good. Balance, Speedy, Crispy. I got you, no problem. All right, I'm sorry.
So besides, is that it? Is it anything besides shoes?
Shoes, there's orthotics. They can be custom, which means they're pick a cast of your foot and it's a prescription type of insert device. But those are definitely, you know, especially for people who have flatter feet that have struggles with pronation. There are a lot of different things, you know, orthotics that can be put into the shoes that can help. Not just for flat feet, for any type of foot. A lot of different foot issues can be addressed outside it. So, proper warming up, stretching, all those things are important. No, you know, weekend warriors are great, but just make sure that you prepare yourself to participate in your sport.
Yeah, actually, I had a question for you. Another question for you, but we have a question from our chat room real fast. The question is, in terms of orthotics, how often should someone replace the foot?
That's a great question. I mean, it depends on how often you're using orthotics and for what purpose. You know, we have some patients that are runners that, you know, might put 20 miles a week, you know, on their orthotics versus someone who's only walking or just pretty much using them in a dress shoe. So sometimes they last anywhere from 2 to 4 years. Sometimes we have people that come in 5 or 6 years and just need the top cover replaced. So it just all depends on the amount of wear and tear that you're placing on your orthotic device. But
usually
last a few years.
Okay. My next question is something that I thought of when you came on and talked about people coming to see you and your profession. And I know that in the African-American community, one of the issues we have is actually taking our health serious. A lot of men specifically and a lot of our audience, the bottom line is they don't go to the doctor.
Right.
With that being said, do you have the same issues in your profession that, you know, other doctors do?
I would definitely have to agree with that. Again, it's all, you know, specific to the person that we're talking about. But, yes, as a rule, I think men definitely are the last people to go to the doctor. Usually it's a wife or a girlfriend that's like, oh, you know, you have nail fungus or your feet smell or you have athlete's foot. You need to go to the podiatrist. So a lot of times that is the case. You know, we're not seeing them in unless there's some type of toenail infection or something serious. But again, everyone is different, but usually that is the case. Men are usually the least I'm sick to go to the doctor.
Jimmy, it's very interesting that you brought that up, because I actually had a doctor's appointment this morning, and everybody, you know, who I was texting with or talking to on social media, everybody who found out I was at the doctor's office this morning got all instantly concerned. You okay? What's wrong? What's this? I'm like, it's January. I just got an appointment. Like, you know, some of us do go to the doctor routinely like we're supposed to. So
it's one of those things that people give you props. People giving you props for something you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
PJ is just arrived. PJ, didn't you have a question you wanted to ask about some stanking feet?
I did. And Dr. Roll, how you doing? This is PJ. I'm usually the one that's kind of late to the show because of some scheduling conflicts, but I'm always here, better late than never. So I do have a question for you, and I'm wondering, right? Is there a medical reason behind like people with smelly feet? Is it diet? You know what I'm saying? Is it neglect? Is it hereditary? That people are just lazy and never get down in the shower? They never get down to the soles of the feet and put some good soap to the calluses and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, in the defense of the patient, you know, because there are some people that have an issue, and it is very embarrassing, especially when it is embarrassing to people. So, I mean, in defense of a person, if anyone has ever dealt with that, it is a problem. And there's a name for that. It's called hyperhidrosis. Sometimes people have overactive sweat glands. So, I mean, there's about 3,000 sweat glands in a foot per square inch. I mean, there's a lot of sweat glands. So the problem usually happens because, you know, your foot is in an enclosed area. It's not able to breathe well. So you're dealing with a problem with overactive sweat glands and then bacteria. So what happens, people sweat a lot. Sometimes there are other, you know, influences such as missing diet, stress. There's different reasons why people sweat a lot. So
there are antiperspirants
for the feet. There's Botox in severe cases. There's black tea. People have talked about using that. Basically, yes. Clean socks.
Yeah, that's when I'm going to start telling people somebody feet thing. I'm like, you need some black tea, guys.
Because I used to know a girl back in high school.
The other thing is, you should rotate your shoes in 24-hour intervals. Some people tend to wear the same shoes all the time, and that's another reason why that happens.
So get some black tea and get your shoe game up.
I wish I knew about that back in high school. Because a girl that I used to date back in my early days in high school, her feet used to smell like rotten chili and boiled bologna mixed together with a little chain smoke. And I used to be like, man, is there any way that we can remain intimate with just sneaks and some Timberlands on? But, that's neither here nor there. I'd have brought her some tea and gave her a bowl. I'd have brought a syringe for Botox and administered it myself. I ain't know that.
Doc, I'm actually glad that we heard that from you, because if I'm in the gym and somebody's feet stink and they would have, like, tried to explain to me what you just said in those medical terms, probably told them to stop lying and wash his feet. So I'll listen out for those terms, you know, because if somebody says that, I'm like, okay, they're serious. They really know what they're talking about, unless they were listening to our show and they're just going to try to throw it back in your face.
They're going to tell you, look, I'm stressed out. You know, my feet stink because I'm stressed out. But, Doc, we have another question.
I just lost my job.
Put a question from our chat room again. And our chat room is asked, often should someone replace their socks, buy new ones and replace the old ones? Is there a time frame you should use socks?
I was about to say, every day. What are you talking about?
Of course you change the socks. But no, how often should you just buy new socks? Like, you know, I mean, of course, socks last forever as long as they're clean and they're, you know.
As long as they don't hold up.
Yes, I mean, that's true. Obviously, you want to wear clean socks. But sometimes people that struggle with athlete's foot or nail fungus, I mean, it's a good idea sometimes to just throw them out, because what happens, the water you wash your socks in sometimes it's not hot enough to kill fungal spores, things like that. So, I mean, there's some, you know, help that can be probably achieved with that by just throwing them out. But if you're having issues with, you know, dark socks that you're wearing all the time and you're getting a lot of recurrent athlete's foot infections and things like that, it's probably better to just throw them out. and just start over with a clean white start. So.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it comes to my chat room again. Deb, I know you had another question you would ask, right?
No, you can go ahead. I'm.
Yeah, I actually had two more questions, and I'm done, Doc. I know I have a lot of questions, but
Let's talk about some sports, Jim. Let's get into this.
Yeah. I have one question though. That's personal. I don't really want to know this.
Oh, okay.
And I just want to see the doctor. I'm a practicing nudist, so I don't like to wear a lot of clothing. With that being said, right? I'm joking, by the way. In the summertime, if I just want, like, a lot of people tell me, I've heard people say that's not good if you wear, like, you know, flip flops or Crocs or something like that because it doesn't have the support. Is any truth to that? Like, so you mean to tell me I'm just supposed?
Yeah, I mean, I think any suit which is not worn in moderation is a problem because flip flops don't provide any support. Flip flops were not designed to walk city blocks and to be wearing them all day long. You know, a lot of times you end up seeing people that have plantar fasciitis, problems exacerbating their flat feet symptoms. So, I mean, it's definitely a place for flip-flops, but that should not be your wardrobe staple, you know, in the summertime.
Okay.
So,
I just want to make sure I didn't have to, like, walk onto the beach with boots on or nothing like that. But, getting back to sports, though, Doc, you know, we have some common injuries that we always see covering sports. An example would be turf toe, like Deion Sanders had a rough case of turf toe throughout his career. So can you explain to our audience exactly what is turf toe? Because it seemed to be very painful when you watch athletes like Deion go through that.
Yes, exactly. Turf toe is a real injury. I mean, it's definitely a significant injury. There are different degrees of turf toe. There's some, but first of all, basically what it is, you have a hyperextension of the big toe joint. So the big toe joint is in a fixed place, and the foot is center flex against the ground using the heels in the air. So you can imagine someone basically on their toe and the heel is up. So you have all this pressure on the big toe, and sometimes somebody might come from behind and tackle a person on the toe. You just imagine the impact that they're creating on the big toe joint. So sometimes it can just be a simple sprain. The person can weight bear on it. They, you know, take an NSAID, ice it, rest it for a little while, and it's fine. There's some grade levels 2 and 3 where they're going to require, you know, to really miss a couple weeks of practice. And then there's a third grade where these people are going to need surgery because there's ligaments and sesamoids and things around that area that if the ligament is ruptured, you have an unstable joint and you're going to have serious problems. So it's a real injury and it's definitely something that has to be treated properly. Otherwise, you're going to have arthritis, you're going to have long-term issues with turf toe. So, yes.
Okay, Doc, this is PJ again. Question for you. We see countless athletes that tear their Achilles tendon, and a lot of them come back, but it's like they're never really back to what they were after they tore their Achilles, like prior, you know, they're never really back at the level that they were prior to rupturing or tearing their Achilles. So can you talk to us about the stages of recovery from an Achilles tendon tear, from like the actual injury to when an athlete actually comes back to competing?
Mhm. Well, first, I mean, Achilles ruptures are very serious. That's a major injury that usually puts people out for the whole season. I mean,
right,
major plantar flexor of the foot. So there are two muscles that make up that Achilles tendon that come down and insert on the heel, the calcaneus. So a lot of times what happens, sometimes people have an existing disease, a pathology to the tendon that's weakening over time, and then all it takes is one specific injury that causes a total rupture of the tendon. So there's two ways it can be treated. Obviously, in a high-performance athlete, they're going to need a primary repair, which is surgery. If it's an older patient that's not that active and not much doing much ambulation, they can be in a cast. So that's about 2 months. But with primary repair, you know, basically they're going to be out for about 4 to 6 months. Usually they're going to be in a splint, and then they're going to be non-weight-bearing with crutches or something, some type of device, then they go into a boot, then they start physical therapy, and they start putting weight on it. But the problem is, a lot of times, again, they're going back too soon, the tendon is not as strong, they don't have as much power to the tendon anymore, so all of the agility and all the power that they had, they lost that, because either the tendon is too long, or either they haven't given the tendon enough time to heal, so they re-rupture. Or they have micro tears in the tendon, and they're not having as much power as they did. So that's a big problem. But for the most part, they're going to be out for several months. I mean, 6 months, 8, 9 months, they're going to be out, you know, with rehab, so.
Yeah, my brother's a weekend warrior. He just tore his Achilles a couple months ago. It looked really painful. Moving on to another one, because I know you mentioned plantar fasciitis. I personally suffer from plantar fasciitis, and when that flares up, it feels like someone's actually tearing the skin on the bottom of my foot apart. Now, for our listeners, what exactly is plantar fasciitis, and how is it treated?
So, plantar fasciitis is basically, plantar means the bottom of the foot. Fasciitis is inflammation of the fascia, which is a soft tissue band on the bottom of the foot. So, that band starts on the heel, the calcaneus, and then it fans out to the bottom of the digits of the foot. So, what happens, because it's not very elastic type of tissue, it gets inflamed, it gets tight. When you step down, most people describe this feeling when they step down out of bed first thing in the morning, they have heel pain. They have a lot of pain. So it's treatable most of the time with anti-inflammatory drugs, inserts. Sometimes an injection is needed, steroid injection in the foot. Yes, in the foot.
HGH.
So there's a lot of ways that can be treated. So avoiding flat shoes, non-supportive shoes are one of the main things to help.
See, and that's one of the things, because when Jimmy was talking about wearing flip-flops, like, all summer, like, I'm a Nike flip-flop type of dude, so I'm sure that I'm sure that helped in my condition. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you're just too lazy to wear shoes, man. It's comfortable, but it comes back to bite
not
you. But yeah, that is painful. It really feels like somebody's just like trying to rip my heel in half, and it actually stops me from doing. Like I'm trying to be more active now. I want to get back to playing basketball and stuff. But every time I run, you know, eventually it flares up. It starts to hurt. Like one time I went out jogging and I damn near had to call my wife to come pick me up midway through the jog.
Damn. So you wear like a gelatin?
I walked the rest of the way home. Huh?
Can you wear, like, those gelling insoles? Does that help? Like, if you wear, like, the little cushy thing?
I don't have a problem with Dr. Scholes, but I guess, then again, I do. Only because...
You get them Dr. Rose.
I'm talking Dr. Scholes. I know, exactly. I'm taking millions of dollars from people with these ingrown toenail removers, treatments, all types of craziness. But the inserts, I don't have an issue with, but I do in the sense of the materials that they use. A lot of times they're using silicone gels and squishy things that feel comfortable. But you're not getting any type of structural support. There's no firmness to the insert. So you might be Magellan with a little gel, you know, the heel cuffs, but you're not really getting support. So you really need some type of orthotic device that's made of different material that's going to give you more support.
So you need one of them boots that give you, like, 3 inches at the bottom? Like one of them joints that make you look like you're dancing every time you walk? You don't need nothing big like that, do you? Like
no,
heel toe boots?
Some people do have severe enough plantar fasciitis where they do have to be immobilized. But most people, it's treatable. It's definitely treatable without surgery. But you just have to be committed to doing certain things and making certain changes. Like I said, with stretching, you can do icing, injections, there's orthotics. There are a lot of things that can be done. Sometimes people need physical therapy even. But most people do not need to have surgery to treat it.
Well, Doc, I have a question.
I'm a lance my foot.
Doc, you brought up the term like support several times in this conversation. You talk about support, and my question is, how do you feel about like those Vibram five finger? Like I know a lot of people have the Vibram, whatever they're called. I know people have this movement of like wearing you know those kind of shoes when they run or whatever to try to get actual less support, you know, or
I mean,
run barefoot.
I really see, unless you really have experience with running that way and have trained that way, that is not a way that you should be running on a regular basis. There are people out there who definitely have experience with training that way, but just theoretically, I personally don't recommend that to patients just because you're walking, basically running barefoot with no support. So, I mean, you're just pretty much asking either for a puncture wound or some type of injury because you have no support. But, again, there's people out there that have trained with these and they have no injuries and they feel like they feel comfortable with it. But for the everyday person who's not an athlete, I don't think that's a good shoe for people to wear every day. trained with us, so.
All right, Doc. Before we get you out of here, you know, of course, we gotta, you know, you got a chance to tell everybody about your practice. Where can we find you guys? Make sure you give us that pertinent information. As we say in the war room, do your commercial.
Yes, this is my shameless plug, but yes, the name of our group is Alexandria Podiatry Associates. It's a group of three other doctors besides myself. There's Dr. Jeffrey Koster, Jeffrey Graziano, and Dr. Jun Yoon. So we have two office locations, both in Alexandria. The closest one to D.C. in Maryland is off of King Street. It's 3543 West Braddock Road in Alexandria. And the other location is 7023 Little River Turnpike in Annandale. So they're about 10, 15 minutes apart, but they're close to Fairfax, close to D.C., Metro accessible, the King Street exit for the Bradley Shopping Center location. And our office hours are from 8:15 to 4:30. And we are not open on weekends. We also service three of the Inova hospitals through ER calls, so Alexandria Hospital, Mount Vernon, and Fair Oaks Hospital. I go to the wound care centers and wound healing centers at Fairfax and also at Mount Vernon Hospital. So we are very busy. We love new patients. We love pediatrics. We love geriatrics. We love athletes. We want to see everyone. So
basically, if you're listening from the D.C. area and you suffer from plantar fasciitis or you sprained your ankle or you tore your Achilles or if you got an ingrown toenail or if your feet stink, make sure you call. All this information will be, you know, we'll put it all on our social network, on our Facebook page.
The office number is 703-379-0700, and that's the same number for both locations. So.
Okay. So don't worry. We'll get it from you later, and we'll plaster it all over our social media so everybody can call you the people who lost their jobs and they're stressed out and their feet stink now. So we want to thank you. We definitely want to thank you for coming on tonight and spreading this pertinent information with our listeners. And we will definitely do it again. So, you know, we'll be in touch.
Thank you, guys. I've enjoyed myself thoroughly.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thanks,
thank
you. Thanks,
Doc. Dr. Monique Roll, everybody.
Bye.
One.
Yeah. That was a lot of information, man. I learned a lot. You know, I mean, we usually do, like, because it seems like everybody who's played some type of a sport or if we just watch sports, we think we know everything about the medical world as far as, you know, foot injuries, knee injuries, stuff like that. But I learned some stuff, you know. I see just free therapy. I had to whisper to Jim, like, yo, man, we know her. We can call her on the offline and get information.
No, see, but I wouldn't remember the question. As she was talking, she was bringing up stuff and maybe, you know, think of other questions. So, you know, I was going off script, so to speak. But I would have forgot. You know, I'm old now. Anyway, let's talk about the NBA real quick. And the NBA Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from anywhere. Phone, your computer, BlackBerry, iPhone, Android, Palm. And as I always tell you, if you do have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, you have issues. You probably have self-esteem issues and didn't have a father at home. But anyway, the latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Go to Stitcher.com/TheWarRoom. That's one word. And use the coupon code TheWarRoom because you will be entered into a contest to win millions and millions of money. Let's jump into some hoops. Anyway, the NBA players of the week are one Brandon Jennings and Kevin Durant. Devin, what did their numbers look like this past week?
All right, Brandon Jennings, this is actually his second time winning the award. Milwaukee had a 3-1 week, and this included come-from-behind road victories over the Bulls and the Raptors. His averages for the week was 24.5 points per game. He shot 48% from the field, had 6.5 assists, and averaged 4 rebounds. Durant and the Oklahoma City Thunder had a 3-1 record as well. He scored more than 25 in every game last week, including a season-high 42 against the bum-ass Lakers on January 11th. He averaged 32.5 to go with 6.8 rebounds and 5.5 assists. So this is Kevin Durant's, like, maybe third time winning this. Brandon Jennings, this is actually his second time, so he's a repeat offender this year. So congrats to them dudes.
And by the way, I agree with you. The Lakers are horrible. And as a Lakers fan, you know, I can't even say anything. The next thing is LeBron. Ramon James has become the youngest player to score 20,000 points. And he also reached 5,000 assists in last night's game. And, you know, the only thing I can say about
no
that.
No human being can do that.
In his Sunny Hill voice.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, it's just amazing.
He's definitely big to be in the 20,000 point club. I don't really hold a lot of, you know, and I said the same thing when Kobe Bryant got this distinction of being the youngest. It's kind of a different landscape. You know, LeBron came right out of high school and was the man right away on his team. So, you know, being the first, if you're as talented as LeBron, that's not a surprise to me. You know, Wilt went to school for like 4 years. MJ went to school for 3 years. Now, those guys, I think their distinction is a little better because they actually did it in less games than LeBron and Kobe. So, like, youngest, that's not really hard to be when you come out and you play your first game at 18 years old. But
I think,
you know,
it all equals out. They're the youngest and they're the fastest because if they would have put the years in school, they probably would have been had a more mature game when they came in and could have done it the fastest. So, it's all, you know, it all is what it
well,
is.
Well, Kobe's, because, you know, he was on the bench for, like, 2.5
years.
Yeah, so, you know, so you kind of knew, like, somebody came out and, you know, they got to have Kobe's role quicker than Kobe got his own role, then they would surpass
but
him.
It's also, what's impressive to me about this is also he had also reached 5 grand in assists. I mean, 20,000 points and 5,000 assists, I mean, listen, man.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at LeBron's game, like, he's unselfish.
Yeah, the playmaker part of his game is, you know, that you can attribute those assists to that because he's, you know, LeBron is like a weird clone of like a Magic Michael kind of Donovan McNabb kind of mixture. So
he was made in the lab. I'm very convinced.
Yeah.
LeBron,
Carl Malone.
Like someone told me last night watching the game, they were like, LeBron must get bored at times having to play with humans and all. And I was laughing. I was like, it's kind of funny.
Until the playoffs.
LeBron, yeah, how about that? You know, hey, look, he's winning the chip now. You know what I mean? He used to have bad luck. Now you might see him in a jack truck. You know what I mean? Like, you never know these days, your brother LeBron. LeBron might go off a couple, but that's either here or there, man. Shout out to him for that accomplishment because it is
He was also the youngest player to win Rookie of the Year, record a triple-double, score 1,000 points, score 10,000 points, win an MVP, all that kind of stuff. But,
yeah, man.
Well, not
the
MVP honors at the All-Star game.
Right now is his time. You know what I'm saying? That's just the bottom line. It's his time. And I wonder, with Kevin Durant approaching, because Roy just on Twitter, Roy said that he believes that Kevin Durant will be the next to redo that. But it's one of those things where I wonder how this plays out long-term because will it be that Durant would have been the man if not for the fact that he came up along the lines of LeBron's era?
It's going to be
we'll
close,
see.
Though, because Kevin he was forced to go to college for that 1 year. So it's gonna be close, you know, whether or not he becomes the youngest to this plateau. And
yeah,
he does score,
yeah.
Like, you know, he gets it in. But
Yeah, he scores like it's nobody's business, though. That being said, man, let's talk about Kobe Bean Bryant, who wants to become a defensive stopper again. And Coach D'Antoni says that he's going to allow him to do so. What is your guys' opinion of this whole thing with wanting Kobe to stick the best player on every team every night, considering he's damn near 40?
I think it's honorable. Like you said, the fact that he's so old, and it's like for us to, you know, this is – he was saying that, you know, this has been the toughest season with trying to figure out what buttons to push to make the team successful. So I guess this is the latest button that he's trying to push. And he was kind of successful in it the first couple of nights. I think they saw flashes of it when they played against the Clippers and he guarded Chris Paul for a nice stretch. Even though they lost and Chris Paul did his thing, Kobe did a good job on him for a while. So he ended up guarding Brandon Jennings. He held him to 15 points, I believe, and he held Kyrie Irving to 12 points. So I just think it's going to be difficult unless the other team – I mean, the team hasn't really had trouble scoring. So as long as those guys can keep up the offensive production – And they don't need Kobe to expend all of his energy on the offensive end, then this could be good. But I think eventually it might break the dude down.
That's what I think. I think it's going to. I think it'll catch up with him. I think he can physically do it. But I think as progressively the season goes on, I think it's going. I mean, I just look at Kobe and just look at the wear and tear on his body from his the type of career that he's had and the amount of years that he's been in the league and going so far in the playoffs all the time. I don't think that will work for a whole season. So I think maybe even by playoff time, if he continues at that rate, I think it's going to start to show just because he just has a lot of wear and tear on his body. But, I mean, Kobe always has been somebody who's looked to do that and be that person to take on the best, at least the best wing player on every team. So
the funny thing, PJ, is a kill. Once he heard this, I know he's thinking of us like I told y'all so, because let's not even pull any punches. Let's not front. This has come about because Steve Nash can't guard anybody. Because if you think about it, with all the great point guards in the league now, if Kobe's going to be taking the person who has the most impact on the other team, a lot of the nights he's going to be guarding little point guards. And already he's guarded three. He's guarded Chris Paul, Kyrie Irving, and Brandon Jennings. And I know it's a, you know, anybody – has a tough time guarding those three guys, let alone a 6'6'2 guard who's 17 years in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, Leroy has shot us a question on Twitter, but you guys kind of answered it already because he said that what will this do to him in May? And both of you guys kind of agreed. Without even knowing, I think it's going to break him down. It's not going to work.
He's going to be going in the layup line in a wheelchair in May.
And the thing is, they're not winning like they expected to be winning when the team comes. So they're going to have to do this to even get in the playoffs. Like,
man,
if they were winning at a rate that you expect a team this talented to win, later in the season, maybe they could rest Kobe a few games. They can get their Greg Popovich
on.
He can't rest. There's no way he can rest because they're going to be fighting for the last day of the season to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, John and our chat room said the Lakers team only lose when they're on national TV. They can't win on national TV. They only win games when they're not on TV. So
I was about to say, John must not be watching the games when they're not on national TV.
They have won. I mean, if you look at most of their wins, you know, they get swarmed on national TV. Man,
that's
Jesus
true, because on national TV is when they play decent teams. Like the recent winning streak or the few games that they won been against the Bucks. You know, the Raptors, teams like that. So, yeah, they're not going to be on TV playing them.
But up until recently, they weren't beating them either.
Yeah.
They weren't beating them either, yo.
Dwight Howard may be getting his legs back. So maybe that'll...
Yeah, but it's going to take so long.
Kobe can do this.
You notice that he seems to get a little more pep in his step every game, but by the time he gets back, it's going to be like, you know what I mean, like May 1st.
Kobe going to be dead by the time Dwight comes back.
Right when he gets his sea legs back. Yeah.
it's too depressing, man. Let's talk about another basketball topic. There's one Andrew Bynum, a.k.a. Harriet Tubman Tyson. He's eyeing the All-Star break for return. What you guys think about that? Do you have any promise left with him coming back?
I hope so. No, I just want to say I hope so, man. I'm like, I want to see something from him this year. I mean, I don't want him to rush back because I don't want him to come back and just be. Now, obviously, he's going to have to go through getting acclimated with the game and the pace of the game. I know he's going to have to go through that. I don't want him to be rushed back too quickly where he out there looking like, you know, Mark Eaton or something in his latter in his career. But so, I don't know. I'm ready. I'm ready to see him. I just want to see what he's going to look like with this team.
Yeah.
Look like a mascot sitting on the bench every game.
Same here.
Look like Django Unchained on the bench every game. Come on, Django. Put Django in the game, man.
Well, look like Django 7 foot. But I agree. I mean, it was a big splash that they made in the offseason, so you want to see the guy before the season's over. And at least if you can get 20 games or so out of him, you can make a better – judgment of whether you're going to offer him that long-term deal or not. If he tries to come back and then he still can't make it throughout the shortened season, then you're still going to have to think about what you're going to do, you know, once he becomes a free agent to see if it's even worth it or not. I mean, it's funny, though, how I hear a lot of fans talking like, you know, yeah, the Sixers, they got a lemon. How they get in this situation and stuff like that. Come on. Anybody would have taken that trade. Nobody knew that the dude was just going to break down like that. So,
right.
You know, hindsight is always 20/20. So I'm not mad at them for making the move. I'm still actually kind of proud of them for making the move, because when was the last time the Sixers had a front office that was this aggressive? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just hope to see him come out, get acclimated with his teammates, and see what they can do down the stretch. I mean, we all playing for second place at this point, you know, when it comes to the Heat.
Yo, last thing I just want to mention real quick and see if you guys have anything to say about it is John Wall is back. Do you care at all?
Here?
Yeah. That
I mean, the funny thing is the Wizards have won, like, 3 of their last 4. Like, they were on a 3-game winning streak until last night. Two of those games were the first two that he came back in. From the beginning of the season, I didn't think the Wizards were going to be the worst team in the league. I actually like their roster when their roster is healthy. So, you know, getting John Wall back is pretty big. They're already in a big enough hole where they're not going to make any real noise. But you can kind of see what kind of talent the team has and maybe what direction they're going to go in the future. So they've been playing better with him there, and Bradley Beal is maturing every day. So I think the Wizards, you know, they'll be on the right track sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Strictly for entertainment purposes. I mean, I don't really care, but just to see Hyper Speedy back on the court playing, he's just entertainment.
Call him, call him Hyper Speedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
He got that early Iverson career speed, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt, man. So that's the last thing I actually had on Hoops right now. Dad, tell everybody real fast how to get in touch with us.
All right, y'all can check out the website, of course, like we said earlier, warroomsports.com, to call in and speak to us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk, because we are about to talk some NFL football, things that's going on in the week, do a little recap of the divisional round, a little preview of the conference championships. But NFL Wrap is brought to you by Fanatics. For the best in your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, shop Fanatics. Shopping Fanatics is easy. Just go to our website at worldroomsports.com. Click on the Fanatics logo on our main page or on our sponsors page and get the latest in NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA gear, and more. Before we get to the main topics, in other news, basically, there's been some coaches hired from the big coach firing that we experienced a few weeks ago. The Bears hire the top CFL coach, Mark Trestman. He used to be an offensive coordinator and quarterback coach for a few teams in the NFL, and he's supposed to be great at what he does. San Diego hires Denver offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, and the Jags hire Seattle's defensive coordinator Gus Bradley, who I thought was going to end up with the Philadelphia Eagles. Speaking of our hometown Philadelphia Eagles, I hope everybody's listening. I know a lot of people wanted to get our opinion on this whole thing. So it's Chip Kelly time. The Eagles hire Chip Kelly from the University of Oregon, who actually declined the job about a week ago, said he was going back to Oregon. PJ, what do you think about the Eagles hiring Chip Kelly? Let's get right into this.
Here's my thing. I mean, I hate to be like kind of on the fence about the whole situation, but I'm just not sure. I look at it like, all right, Chip Kelly has no professional football experience, but he's had success on the college level. He's kind of an offensive juggernaut, if you will, on the offensive level with his scheme. With his scheme, and they're like Loyola Marymount, like fast break kind of offense. What I'm wondering is, and this is, I guess, I just, everything to me is still TBD. Like, what system does he have in plan? Looking at our roster, and I guess maybe considering some, you know, what we could possibly do in the draft, what's his plan with our roster going forward in the NFL? So is he planning on bringing that same style here? I mean, he is looked at as an innovator, that type of offensive mind on the college level. So I'm wondering, is he going to bring that type of up-tempo, fast-paced, like that type of innovation to our offense and to our team? And if so, what pieces is he going to put in place, and what is he going to do with the current pieces that are there? So I'm not opposed to him coming here, because I'm looking at it like any coach is still, to me, going to have to still show and prove. Even if it was like a Gruden or, you know, any of those guys, like hell, Brian Billick, whoever, they're still going to have to show and prove, and I'm still interested to see what they're going to do with what we have in place now and what their future plans are. So I'm not opposed to Chip Kelly. I mean, I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm like, whatever, man, I'm just ready for something. So
now, see, that's kind of the approach that I was taking to this whole coaching search the whole time. I was kind of indifferent to what the Eagles were going to do, because bottom line, you know, a lot of people want the big names and the retreads. I don't really care for that. It doesn't matter to me. And really who they hired really didn't matter to me. But the ironic thing about it is that the only coach that they've named in this whole search that I did have a slight opinion on and kind of spoke out against was Chip Kelly. And when he turned the Eagles down last week, I was kind of glad that he did it, because he was the only one I really had an opinion about. That's not to say that he doesn't have my full support right now. I just didn't want anybody who was known for the gimmicky college offense. Like you said, the whole rushing thing, like he tries to run a play every 13 seconds. That's fine. I still think you got to have a pretty smart quarterback to be able to do that in the NFL. But we spent 16 weeks like trashing the Washington Redskins offense, even though it worked for this season. We kind of know that gimmicky offenses, NFL defensive coordinators are too smart. Like, you see the Wildcat like once every 3 weeks now. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
A few years ago, the Wildcat was happening on every other play, especially down in Miami when they first, you know, made it big in the NFL. We spoke all season about how this whole read option thing and the pistol and spread and all this kind of stuff wouldn't last in the NFL, first and foremost, in my opinion, because they're just going to start hitting the quarterback. You know, whether it's working against them or not, they're going to get teams out of doing it by hitting the quarterback, because he's essentially a running back at that point. So I'd be a hypocrite to be really excited about Chip Kelly after I spent all of this time speaking out against that type of offense. My question is, what do they do with Nick Foles now? Because Nick Foles showed a lot of promise down the stretch of the season, but he is far and away from the type of quarterback that Chip Kelly would need in this offense. Ironically, we have a quarterback on our roster that Chip Kelly would need for this type of offense. He goes by the name of Michael Vick. I don't want to pay Michael Vick $16 million to come back. I don't want Mike Vick to renegotiate to a smaller contract and come back. But at this point, for this type of offense, who's the better, you know what I'm saying, who's the better fit? So,
right.
So I don't know, kind of skeptical about the whole thing. But like I said, you know, I want to give everything a chance. He might be successful, so we'll see how it goes. I just
you
hope
know what also made it bad, too,
Dez?
Yeah, I know. You know what's made it bad, not to cut you off, Jimmy, but real quick, what I was going to say is now what you see with from Colin Kaepernick and from, like you said, from RG3, now this whole read option thing and these athletic running type of quarterbacks seems to become in vogue. Now everybody's talking about it. It's like, oh, look what he did to the Kaepernick did to the Packers, and that's cool for like certain games and spots in the season. But like you said, that's just not going to like it's going to be too difficult to like no quarterback can hold up to that style year after year after year and like be successful that way, because it's you just can't take those kind of hits unless you're going to have, you know, a quarterback the size of Wilfork from New England, and, you know, he can run like Colin Kaepernick. That's not going to work.
No human being can do that.
Exactly. So I don't know if, like, Lori and them got excited and, like, you know what I'm saying? They're like, ooh, like, look at what, you know, San Francisco just did, and look at RG3, and, you know, let's get Kelly in here, and maybe he can implement that here. And
I just hope
that's what he wasn't driven by.
Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I was just saying, the thing is, they fall in love with these offensive coaches, man, and that just doesn't win, man.
Yeah, I want to go, Bradley.
I think the actual number is 8 out of the last 12 Super Bowl champions were defensive guys. And
right.
The thing
coaches,
about it is,
and they still don't realize that.
Defensive coaches won 8 out of the last 12 championships. Now, peep this. So that means it's 4 offensive guys that won. 2 of those guys were Brian Billick and John Gruden, who had a nasty Tampa Bay defense, and the Ravens
didn't work.
One of the greatest defenses ever.
I just watched the story of the 2000 Ravens today, man. They went 5 games without scoring a touchdown.
Yeah,
five games, yo. Keep on breaking numbers down. You know what I'm saying?
In a row,
So 8 out of 12. 2 of them were the Ravens defense and the Buccaneers defense, which was also nasty. So now you've got 2 other teams that won with offensive coaches. One was the Packers, and you have Aaron Rodgers, and the other one was the Saints, and you have Drew Brees.
Right.
So the bottom line is, if you don't have a Drew Brees or an Aaron Rodgers, you need a defense. Football,
you don't have
is
the elite
simple,
of
man.
The elite. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because as much as we make a big deal about the Tom Brady's, the Peyton Manning's, the Matt Ryan's, the Colin Kaepernick's, if you watched and analyzed the games from this past weekend, what wins games is the fat boys up front, and that's on offense and defense. Because all teams that won, their offensive line dominated or their defensive line dominated. Football is just that simple, but at the end of the day, people fall in love with all this other stuff. And
to speak to your point, PJ,
about these running quarterbacks, 3 out of the 4 quarterbacks left are pocket passers. They're not the running quarterback. Kaepernick is the only one left. And,
that's the problem, Jimmy, because San Francisco is a good enough team, you know, to possibly win the Super Bowl. And then that's going to make the whole allure of the read option type quarterback grow even more. And to PJ's point, he was like, you know, a lot of coaches, they see the success of Kaepernick, RG3, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, people like that. And it makes everybody want to copy. See, I think that's even worse for the game because the more people that copy, the more the defensive coordinators are going to pay attention to this. If you only have two quarterbacks in the league, 2-3 quarterbacks in the league doing it, then maybe defensive coordinators are like, okay, it's not like I play those guys every week. If they're not in my division, I really don't care because I'm not really going to have to prepare for those guys. The more teams that do this, the faster – you know, defensive coordinators are going to be mandated to do something to shut this down. So it's like with the success that's going on now, it's like the Eagles, you know, we're going to be kind of late to the party because defensive coordinators are already working on it. You know what I mean?
And the thing about it is, man, people
So will he be willing to adjust and adapt if it doesn't work? That's what I'm saying.
What's his plan?
Or is he just going to go down in flames with it, you know, either way?
And this is also not college where – he can't have Phil Knight come send a care package and get the best recruits in the world to come play for him every year.
Right.
He can't
I forgot
have,
about
he can't
that,
do
though.
That no more.
Well, no, they probably mad at him. I was about to say we might get some nice gear for the Eagles, but they probably mad at dude. They probably cut
Phil
him
Knight
off.
Phil Knight don't like dude. Phil Knight is an alumni of Oregon, so he probably don't mess with the ball.
Yeah,
the fact of the matter is, the first thing that came to mind when I saw that he changed his mind, I was like, them sanctions about to come now.
He knew something was coming down the
pipe. It's all coming out now. That's the only problem. I think what my fear is, one of my biggest fears is if he's going to come and try to institute that type of offense, that means Michael Vick is going to stay here. Because, I mean, I don't know whatever option you would have. Obviously, like you said, Dev, there's no way that Bolton's going to run
before.
That.
He might try to go out and get his man, Dennis Dixon.
Dennis Dixon, but I mean,
AP, we might. Man,
yo, come on, I can't handle this, yo. Seriously,
you see Tebow in Philly?
They could get Tebow in.
Remember how me, PJ, Austin, you know, we defended Tebow to the T. It was all fun and games when he didn't play for our team.
At the same time you did in the chat room. Tebow coming to Philly, man. Let's see how you defend him now.
It was all fun and games when he didn't play for our team. But if they make that move, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be
because in that offense is really, really with that read offense trash. what you're really doing is, like, it's all on the defensive end. It's like you're kind of, as the quarterback, watching how where the defensive end goes. So he comes in and, you know, if he did,
so
depending on
I
which day
front,
he comes down on you.
I ain't going to front though, PJ.
And Vic can't do that. No, go ahead.
It's very entertaining when they do it, though. It's like watching somebody get crossed over. When the quarterback does it, and the defensive end goes the wrong way, it's hilarious. Like,
see, but that's why I think, Jimmy, I think they what they should start doing is to tell that defensive end not to make a decision. Go hit the quarterback. He's
yo,
a running back
agree.
At this point.
Every time,
I mean,
yeah.
Hit him
that's
every time.
You,
he doesn't
yeah,
have
that's
the ball.
What they tell you in
the
movie. They tell you that in
the
movie.
Yeah.
But at
stay
the end
your
of
lane,
the day, is
hit the dude and let it be somebody else.
You need somebody to want to do that because the instincts tell them to go try to make the play because that's what they've been doing their whole life. So
right.
You don't kind of tough.
You need a discipline, dude. Just go hit the quarterback.
Just commit to the quarterback.
It's so hilarious. It's so hilarious. Like speaking of Kaepernick, that game last week, what did he rush for? 187
yards. 186
yards. Yo, he had 178 yards before contact, which means he wasn't even getting touched.
Right,
but you know what?
The
Packers should have gotten out. Well, see, that's the thing. Some people do what they do best, and they don't get out of it. The Packers are a man-to-man team. So every snap of the ball that's a pass play, they're turning their backs to the quarterback because everybody's playing man-to-man. Now, they might have a little bit more trouble against an Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? I just think when you play against a team that's doing this whole read option thing, you have to play some sort of zone because you can't have linebackers and defensive backs turning their back to the quarterback because as soon as you do,
absolutely
out,
not.
You
and
have
the
to watch
point
the
about
quarterback.
That second point that to kind of buttress your point is if you are playing someone that runs that offense, they're more than likely playing with a quarterback that is not experienced in reading a defense.
Right.
It's probably better to jump in different types of zones anyway.
That's what I'm saying. Jump into a zone and make the dude think because when that read option is not there, make him think. And
yeah,
I don't know, man. I'm telling you.
You know that ain't going to work in Philly. If they make number 17.
But y'all think they're going to keep doing that after this dude
I mean,
had
look at him.
Surgery?
Yeah, exactly. Look at him, though. He's becoming unbreakable now from that.
Yeah, Mr. Class.
Exactly.
So we'll see how it pans out. I mean, like I said, we don't know what we have until he gets out there and does his thing. I wish him luck.
I'm concerned about honestly, team. I ain't going to front real quick. I'm concerned about our defense, too, yo. The defensive roster that we have, like what we have on defense right now, do we have a safety? Like, seriously, like we don't have a safety.
We're going to have to draft something. I mean, everybody was excited about how Colt Anderson played, but let's be real. That's just down the stretch fill-in and a hungry dude. He's not a full-time. He's not the dude you want back there full-time. So you definitely need to address that secondary. I think as far as Nnamdi goes, they need to let him – if they're going to pay this dude what they have to pay him and he comes back, they're going to have to let him do what he does more. It's like they got rid of Asante because they wanted to play less zone and more press coverage. But then when he's gone, they're making Nnamdi, who's a press cover dude, play a lot of zone. And he's out there getting toasted like Izell Jenkins and somebody. So it's it's weird because he's always throwing up his hands because he expected safety help. I just don't think those dudes knew what they were doing. So
there was so much confusion on this team. This defense scared me. I mean, oh, Lord.
That's why
anyway.
I hope Chip Kelly goes out and gets a nasty staff. We need, like, a nasty defensive coordinator, man. Somebody need to dig Jim Johnson up because
yo,
he's been down in the booth like Al Davis used to. Al Davis was dead in the booth for like 6 years. He was a mop sitting up there in a wheelchair with a curtain on.
Just put Jim up there in a wheelchair. They might just play harder.
His spirit might come down on him.
All right, so we'll see. We'll see how this goes, man. I mean, of course, we hope it goes good. But like I said, if it doesn't go well, I hope he can adjust and adapt rather than just say, F it, I'm going down with the ship. Because I don't want to be that team, you know, like the Redskins over the past few years where they're hiring a new coach every 2 to 3 years. Like,
right,
let's try to make this happen.
Like a carousel, coaching carousel over here.
Right. So let's recap some of those divisional playoff games from this past weekend. Now, this one I noticed, you know, hurts Jimmy's heart. We're going to talk a little bit about the Ravens and the Broncos because there was a lot of questionable stuff going on in this game. You had Raheem Moore, you know, being out of place. letting them get that long touchdown with 30, 40 seconds left in the game. You had John Fox being very, very conservative.
Late
third and seven, instead of trying to get the first down, he just ran the ball. You get a first down in that situation, the game is over. After Raheem Moore gave up the touchdown, John Fox basically he just kneeled on the ball with 31 seconds left, two timeouts, and one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever lived. He kneeled on the ball saying that they were just shocked and they needed to get out of the round, if you wanted to use a boxing analogy. Then, of course, in double overtime, you had Peyton Manning, who made an egregious mistake, and that just was the nail in the coffin of Ravens' win. What do you guys think about all this? I know Jimmy, he made a video where he kind of told us how he thought about it. Y'all can check that out on warroomsportstv.com. PJ, what are your thoughts on it? What lost this game for the Broncos?
I think it was a combination. Like, with the things that you mentioned, I initially looked at it and I was like, damn, Peyton threw another pick. But, right after the game, the game and it happened, I'm like, damn, man. I like Peyton Manning a lot, but I know this is going to go against his record in terms of his track. Yeah, for the playoffs and this and that. But, like you said, like, Raheem Moore, dog, I mean, you don't want to put a game like that on any one player's shoulders for any one play. But, I mean, come on. When it's a close game, it becomes situational. And then you got to think, I don't know what angle he was taking or what. I don't know what was on, like,
or,
what he was thinking. Like, it looked like.
Or why was he even taking the angle? You don't let the man behind you in that situation.
Nobody should. I mean, that's Pop Warner, deep safety. Nobody gets behind you. Like, nobody gets behind you.
No,
you have an advantage.
You can do that.
So that was egregious. And then, like you said, with John Fox, when you got Peyton. And you got, like, what, 35 seconds with two timeouts?
31 seconds, two timeouts at the 20-yard line.
Yeah,
you don't need a touchdown.
Exactly.
Prater has a nice, you know, he has a good leg. You get 45 yards, and you can at least attempt a reasonable field goal. So I don't understand.
Right.
I was like you, PJ. Like, it happened in double overtime. You're like, damn, like, Peyton just blew that. But then, like, when you get to thinking a little more, like, why were they even in that situation in the first place? There's a lot of speculation going around, like, maybe he kneeled on the ball because if you watch throughout the game, Peyton's passes, you know, it didn't look like he had much on him, so maybe he thought something was wrong with Peyton. But this is my thinking, you know, to combat that kind of speculation. If you didn't think that Peyton had everything he needed, then why would you try to prolong the game? You damn sure would try to get it over with in that last 30 seconds. Now, this is stuff that people are noticing now, but we talked about this all season. Like, Peyton was still there mentally. You know, he was still pretty accurate, but all season his passes have looked wobbly and soft to me. Like,
he never had
we talked about,
yep.
Yeah, like, some of his passes look like they just met with a wall of wind. And it just
and he was in a
dome
field
or something.
In a dome, and the wind hit it.
Yeah, it wasn't new to me. But if they thought something was wrong with the dude, then I'm definitely going for the win. Why make him play more if you think something's wrong with him?
Right.
Like, I don't understand. You don't play for overtime in the playoffs.
I'm thinking even with the picks that Peyton had, though, still, I mean, they wouldn't even be in that situation without Peyton, though. I mean, he still made some good passes in that game.
And the kick return.
I've been quiet, man, but at the end of the day, man, there's enough blame to go around in so many places. Raheem Moore, if I ever see you, we got a rumble on site, nothing personal.
Well, Jim, before you finish, though, the crazy thing is, though, dude really took accountability because he's blaming the whole game on himself. I think dude should have been on suicide watch.
He sounded like he was crying when he was talking about
that
game,
too. Yeah, I think he was breaking down.
I wasn't sure.
I care less about that punk ass. And, yo, but my thing is this, man. If I see dude, it's on site. But even beyond that, man, it's like there's so much blame to go around. John Fox.
Disclaimer, if anybody's listening for the first time, Jimmy's a Broncos fan. So don't tell him why you're mad.
This whole thing with Peyton Manning, man, it's not that he played his worst game of the season because he made a lot of questionable plays. He should have seen two more picks that were dropped, to be honest with you. But that's neither here nor there. But the passing, this double, yo, it's like knowing, you know, he's considered to be one of the smartest football players. So you have to understand the situation in time. You're running right, throwing left. And my thing is this. People tell me, well, if not for Peyton Manning, you wouldn't have been there. But my thing, look, he got to be held to the same standard as everybody else. If Michael Vick runs one way and throws the other, we kill Michael Vick. same rule applies. Yo, that's a rookie mistake. You're running one way, you're throwing back the other way, and you're not throwing to Calvin Johnson, who can jump up and grab the ball. You're throwing it across your body to Brandon Stokely?
And your arm is strong enough
about that, Jim,
to do it.
I saw some clips of Peyton, because that was a big thing that people were talking about. And he did that a lot this year. And, I mean, they were, like, long passes, but but they were completed passes, but they were, like, short – they were short receptions.
But I see what you're saying.
He's done it, so I think that's – You're right. I mean, you got to be a little bit more cautious in that type of game with that situation.
Like,
yeah, you're right. I know.
It's like a rookie mistake, because we always talk about rookies. Like, look, there's nothing wrong with throwing it away and punting. It's no different from what he did to what Tony Romo did. When Romo gets blasted, so he has to take some of the responsibility as well.
It's funny because me and B. Austin had, like, several conversations this week. We'll be arguing back and forth. We probably should have taped it because he's a Peyton Manning apologist. And he's sitting with the, what if y'all didn't have Peyton? What if this? And I'm like, look, man, you can't live by what if. Dude made this dumbass pass. I mean, what if Arnold would have just let Tookie get life? I mean, what if Mr. Party and Pop Mr. Fight? You know what I mean? What if? F-O-H, man.
I just think that game broke down for the Broncos at different levels. So, like, every time y'all got another chance, something happened. So, like,
yo, nobody wanted to win
chance.
That game. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted
Peyton
to win
was
that
like
game.
The last chance, and then he blew it.
But
Jason, who played well all year, like, why are they giving up 38 points?
This is something that nobody
talks
about
in
terms of
Stokely, Jim. What about Peyton pass to Stokely, though? In the end zone, man. He put that thing right
there.
He put that thing in his
kicker. That's all good.
That ain't nothing.
He definitely did. But when it was nut-hugging time, he went back to the Peyton from Tennessee or the Peyton from the Colts. I mean, think about it this way, man. This dude had eight one-and-dones with five playing at home. But hold on, though. Forget that, though. The bottom line is the one thing that nobody's talking about in this football game and what really won the football game is the fact of the matter is their offensive line dominated our defensive line. And this is what I talk about when football, when you watch in the playoffs as the games go along, you just realize that football is simple, which is the reason why the Pittsburgh Steelers are competitive every year because they build their lines. Yo,
Steelers are like the Spurs of the NFL.
Absolutely. The core fundamentals is this. Offensive line and defensive line. You know what I mean? Sometimes you'll have a player like an Aaron Rodgers or a Drew Brees that can make, you know, get around having those. But the bottom line is 9 times out of 10, whoever wins in the trenches is going to win. We had one sack the entire game. I mean, Von Miller and Dumerfield dominated for us this season. They couldn't touch Joe Flacco. I mean, as we talk about every game, not only this game, but as we talk about all the other games that happened last weekend, that's what won the game. The Niners offensive line dominated the Packers. The Falcons offensive line dominated, and then Seattle started dominating, and then, you know what I mean? But it is what it is. This is what wins football games, man, and that's the one thing nobody's talking about. Peyton made the worst pass of the season, I think he made. Raheem Moore made the worst play in the history of our franchise.
Got one sack in that game?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, it was like one or one and a half sacks, yeah, in the whole game. Joe Flacco didn't get touched. And I'm saying, and the thing about it is,
one goddamn hit.
Yo, and that's the thing, though. Like, that's what nobody talks about. The bottom line is there's enough blame to go around. John Fox, even back to his Panthers coach, has
always been
for being conservative. Always. That's just he's like the Marty Schottenheimer of today. He's conservative.
My only problem
with
it is John Elway, Mr. Last Minute Drive himself, is, you know, kind of standing behind him. I don't expect him to throw him under the bus. But I also don't expect you to get out in front of it like, I think that was the right decision. No, you don't, John. Like, come on. If it was four seconds left, the Broncos would have tried to go on the drive back.
In terms of some of his his clock management, when he ran the ball on third down, I didn't have a problem with that. I had a problem with not going for the win at the end. But when he ran the ball on third down.
I think
down,
it was a matter – on that play, it was a matter of just saying, okay, I'm going to put it in the hands of my defense. The defense gave up a lot of points compared to what they usually give up. So I don't know if
you
want to do that.
You got to think, though.
And, you know,
Flacco's
the mad
bomber,
so they were going to go for it. Yeah.
It's like, yo, it's 3rd and 7. Like, I mean, it's 3rd and 7. You run the ball. You give them
And they needed a touchdown. It's not like they needed
a
field goal.
Yeah, they didn't need a field goal. They needed a touchdown. They were 70 yards away. Like, no one knew that. Like, Raheem Moore, he should be deported. I don't even know where
I mean, that was a soft, conservative decision, but it wasn't as bad as the decision to kneel on the ball. Like, you got to try. You got to try to get 40, 45, 50 yards, maybe get a field goal. You got to try.
Especially with Peyton Manning as your quarterback, and
And Prater, who has a Prater's a pretty good
kicker,
and the thin air, like they had everything in their favor. Like you're kicking in Denver, like the air is thin. That's why records have been set in Denver before. Like, yo, dog, what are you doing? I didn't really understand that. So it is what it is. Uncle Ray moves on to play another day. I'm like, without having a real horse in this race. Since the Eagles didn't make the playoffs, like, out of the people that I actually like and would like to see win a Super Bowl, Ray is the last man standing. So I guess I'm, I guess I'm rooting for Baltimore to see if Ray can go out with one. I know Jimmy's a Ray fan, but it's kind of hard to root for the team to just beat your team.
I mean, at the end of the day, man, that's all I got left too, man. Like, honestly, I'm not even messing with football right now. I still haven't. Hopefully, by the time the game starts Sunday, I'll be cool. But right now, if it wasn't for our show, I wouldn't even be talking football though.
This is my pecking order, man. Eagles stink. Didn't even make the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers got destroyed. Andrew Luck, they didn't do anything. Because I'm a Colts bandwagoner now. Peyton Manning lost. Uncle Ray is my last hope. Just to see somebody that I like win a championship, because I really don't care at this point. But, yeah, so that's crazy. Speaking of Aaron Rodgers getting destroyed, the 49ers put it on the Packers, and like we spoke of earlier, Colin Kaepernick, 186 yards rushing. The thing about Kaepernick is, though, he's not just that. He also has a little cannon on him and can pass the ball, and so he's a dual threat. They like to say that a lot of these running quarterbacks are dual threats, but, not really.
Yo, real quick, but before we even jump into that, something that we forgot to bring up on the last one that we just brought up in the chat room is, what y'all think about Champ Bailey?
Ooh.
I think Champ is old.
Ooh.
we forgot to give him his blame, too.
Ooh.
Champ Bailey is no longer the champion.
Yo. He need help. They better stop leaving him out there with no help. He ain't a champ from 2003.
He was getting his ass lit.
He was getting chewed out. Pause.
It wasn't volume. It wasn't the number of receptions. What those receptions were going for.
He missed him a couple times. He ran by Champ one time and was like 10 yards away from him. How you leave somebody 10 yards behind you? How old is Champ?
Yeah,
like 36, 37?
He overthrew. Yeah, I remember that. He left Champ and overthrew him.
How old is Champ, though? Like 36, 37? He's mid-30s, right? Okay.
It's about that time. Or either move to safety, one or the other.
Actually, he's 34. Cornerback. 34-year-old cornerbacks is still. He used to run a 4.28. I'm pretty sure he's not running that at this point.
He's trying to 4.28. Damn.
Yeah, he's got a second slower now. That makes sense because Champ is one of them corners. He doesn't mind hitting. So Chuck Woodson, moving back to safety, that could prolong his career.
Yeah.
Great cornerbacks make great safeties late in their career. So. Yep.
This is true.
Exactly.
My fault. We could jump right into this Packers Niners, though. I had to bring it up.
The rest of them, we're not going to talk that long on them because we got to get a little bit of a preview. Our preview will probably turn into picks as usual. But like I said, Kaepernick, he basically just did the thing to the Packers. And like Jimmy pointed out earlier, the line of scrimmage was basically just dominated by San Francisco. It's rare that you can see a Packers put up 31 points and still not come close to winning. So it was crazy to see that, and it kind of opened my eyes a little more. Like San Francisco might be back as that team that could be a favorite to go on and win.
Their line is nasty.
They got an Alabama of the NFL line. They got a Crimson Tide line. It's funny because I was like I was saying the 49ers are kind of like my pecking order team, and I ain't just saying that because they won, because they even like last year and a couple of years. I'm a Frank Gore fan.
We got all this on tape, so.
So, I mean, I would like, honestly, what I want to see is a Harbaugh Bowl. I mean, I would love to see that. So I'm rooting for both of those teams this week. And Kaepernick, I want to see more of him, though. I mean, he has a cannon. I see some potential. Decent accuracy. So I think over time, as defensive, like we always say, if defensive coordinators get up to snuff with him and he has to make decisions at the line of scrimmage and in the pocket, I think that's what's going to determine, you know, what his where his career is going to go and what type of quarterback he's going to ultimately be. Because it's going to become – he has the physical attributes, so we just got to see what's up in the dome.
It's funny because this is a game where it's PJ's second squad against his arch nemesis.
I know. Yo, don't even ask me about that game. I don't want to curse on the show. Don't even ask me. Atlanta, I can't stand them jokers, boy. But go ahead.
All right, we might as well move on to that. PJ had to. You gotta change the told you so award. For this week, you can say, look, I told y'all they was
so
gonna lose eventually.
I was so excited. I thought that Seattle was coming back because I was in here rooting like the Seattle was the Eagles.
Seattle waited too long to start playing ball. They obviously showed in the second half that they could beat this team, you know, if they had the same type of effort early in the game. I thought it was going to happen. But, you know, Atlanta kind of did the anti-John Fox, and when they were down with less than a minute to go, they went for the gusto. See, now that's the only thing. I give Atlanta props on that because even though we don't trust them and, you know, even though they were favored and we didn't think they were going to win the game, well, not all of us. I think Jimmy might have picked them. But that's the props that I was giving them early in the season because we talked about how they went through a stretch during the season where it seemed like they were begging teams to beat them, but at the end of the game, they always came up with a play or some plays to preserve a win or to you know, snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat. So Atlanta is turning into somewhat of a clutch team. Now, when you're kind of living on that, you don't know how long that can last. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to go out there and just bust a team out. You just got to blow somebody out. Like, you can't live on the dramatic all the time. But, you know, they go for it when they're down like that. We've seen it before. In that game where he threw like a 70-yard pass.
Did they do that against Carolina,
right? Yeah, when Carolina came back and took a lead.
Yeah, against Carolina.
Atlanta is going to go for it when it's time to go. They're trying to get Matty Ice to actually earn that nickname, and I think this season he has earned that nickname.
There's one more game we didn't talk about, and that's is there anything we can even say about like the Patriots and the Texans?
As beat. Man. No.
Yeah.
I just wanted to tell PJ this, because I texted Jimmy when Seattle took the lead. I was like, that's what's up, because we can make PJ's rant into a soundbite and play it on next week's show. And then Matty Ice is like, nah.
Here comes Matty Ice.
He
learned his name, man.
And the funny thing is, I don't mind seeing them do well. Like, people think because we talk about them because that's what they earn. Like, I don't hate them dudes. Matty Ice is from Philly. So, you know, I would love to see him do something, but just don't trust him. It's still one playoff win. They still got show and prove. So, we was about to use your rant as a soundbite and everything. Like, yay, got him.
I was ready to come on talking about, I told you.
You might have started the show with that.
I told you.
As far as the Patriots and Texans, I mean, we pretty much said on the show that they probably was going to put boot heels to their necks again. So there's nothing really to say. You know, that's kind of what we expected. So let's go on and, you know, do our picks for this week. Luckily, it's only two games, so we could probably say a few things about the whole thing.
Yo, I don't even have nothing to say. All I can say is my picks are this. I'm picking the Falcons, believe it or not, and I have no reason for picking the Falcons. everything tells me they should lose, but that's probably why they're going to win, yo. I have no reason.
Don't say that.
I have no reason for picking the Falcons, but I'm picking the Falcons, and I'm rooting for I'm taking the Ravens and the Falcons because the Ravens should have beat the Patriots last year. They outplayed them. They had a missed field goal and a drop touchdown. So I'm going with the Falcons and Ravens in the bowl. I would personally rather see the Niners. No, I would. You know why, though?
Why you don't want to see the Niners?
I know that shit squad PJ, but I got a lot of these dudes on Twitter be hitting me up who these – so-called 49er fans, who I haven't heard from these guys since Garcia and T.O. were there. And now they're like, Garcia and T.O. were there, they were competitive, so I heard from them a little bit, but they disappeared. And now they pop out, they're starting to resurface, so, you know, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my picks, though. Let's go.
No, I'm just saying, it was tough for me. It was tough for me. So go ahead.
I was going to say, for me, it's easy. The it's not an easy game. All right, San Francisco, Atlanta. Atlanta's so fake, though. They so hollow and shallow. They don't got no heart. Their heart pumps high C Kool-Aid. I got the 49ers winning that game. Frank Gore is going to rush for 178 yards. He's going to get 49 yards receiving. Patrick Willis is going to get a tipped interception, okay? And then he's going to get about 3 sacks, and he's going to have about 17 tackles. But the 49ers are going to win going away by about 17 points. In the Baltimore game, Uncle Ray is not letting them lose. The Patriots are the ultimate plug and play team, right? They just plug anybody into this. The boy that was backing up Woodhead last week used to work at UPS the week prior, and he was balling from the running back position. I don't even know his name, but he's in the Belichick system. They're a great team, but they're too finesse. Uncle Ray and them going to smack them in the mouth. Like Jim said, they should have won last year. They're not afraid of Foxborough. They're not afraid of Belichick and Brady, and it's going to be a rumble. I got the Harbaugh Bowl.
Hardball bowl it is. Zach, like I said, it was tough for me. And, you know, we're dropping a video tomorrow with our predictions, so y'all see that. Hey, Jimmy, for real, I mean, we laughed and joked about B. Austin and his picks, but I was almost the same way. I had to do a couple takes. I almost switched up with this Atlanta and 49ers game because I do think that Atlanta has a really good chance of doing this because they're at home. I said, they're running a zone, so they're not turning their back on Colin Kaepernick. However, I'm not going to be the dude who picked one thing on the show and then the video come out saying something else. So I'm still going to ride with the 49ers on that one. As far as the AFC is concerned now, this is a head versus heart situation here. I am full out rooting for Ray Lewis to get one before he leaves. I'm full out rooting for the Ravens to win, but it just seems it's one of the, you know, the Patriots are on one of those rolls. Like, every season there's a period during the season, and maybe once they get into the playoffs, where it seems like the Patriots are unbeatable, you know, of recent years, you know, either in the Super Bowl or right before the Super Bowl, that unbeatable streak ends. I'm hoping that it ends this week because I want to see Ray Lewis do it. But as far as my pick is concerned, I got to go with Tom Brady until the Ravens prove me wrong. So, you know, no disrespect to my Baltimoreans because I'm rooting for you. I'm just, you know, I'm a little vain, so I want my picks to be right. So I'm going to go ahead and boot and pick the Patriots on this one. But
no doubt. So those
I mean, they don't have Gronk, so that's one less weapon. So, you know, and like PJ said, man, Ray going to be on some – he probably going to be crying during the game, like trying to get them dudes like, come on, fellas. Like, it's definitely going to be a rumble, like you said. They're not going to go out there and lay down like the Texans. So smack them.
Absolutely. So those are our picks. Hey, but guys, before I get us out of here, I just definitely want to send one more shout out to the homie, Manti Te'o.
That's a noodle.
All right. Anyway, man. So shout out to man. I tell you, man. Hold your head up.
You can't be that dumb, though, homie. But go ahead. You can't be, homie.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the War Room. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook and Twitter, and all the callers who chimed in to bust it up with us. Sorry we didn't get to you, but you know, we got a special guest. Special thanks to Dr. Monique Rowe of Alexandria Podiatry Associates for stopping through to talk foot and ankle injuries with us. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another episode of us, you know, talking our ish. We'll begin our Super Bowl coverage and a lot more. Until then, enjoy Oprah and Lance if you want to watch that loser. Should have took that to your grave, Op. In the NFL Conference Championship games this week. And we'll see you right back here next week. Be sure to catch our conversations on Facebook and Twitter. And also, make sure to go to warroomsportstv.com because we have some new videos, one drop today and a couple more tomorrow. So, until next time, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We out of here.
Staying in tune to Jimmy. Know the blueprint.
Yo.
Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dev, PJ, Be Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's knocked out.
Call it
323 Smoking 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, the tough push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode.
Woo!
2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.